times when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That looked so much that it's not passed down.
What we talk about
and that so much of the history we have is because
so long we're on that train.
Hey, we're here. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. Joe, I went to Chick-fil-A today.
Yes. How was it?
I had Jesus chicken. It was amazing because the dining room was open.
No, it wasn't.
It was.
I predicted they'd never open that again.
Sam and I were the only two in there, and I don't think anybody else knows that it's open. But we pulled up, and she goes, I think we can eat in the dining room. And so she goes in, like, all sheepishly. You know, the workers are all back there, you know, doing their thing. And she's like, is the dining room open? And the girl was like, yeah. And Sam was so excited. Like, she couldn't get through her order. The girls were, you know, laughing. We were just giddy to be, and we're the only ones inside. They came and brought us mints. They tried to refill our drinks like 10 times and stuff like that, because we're the only people in there.
So VIP treatment.
We were waited on hand and foot. Nice. So yeah, I was very excited to see that. I'm sure you've seen that some states are doing away with certain things having to do with something that's been going on for 2 years. Did you like how I did that? So we don't get throttled.
Dancing around, tiptoeing. I like it.
Yeah, some of those states are magically doing away with certain things that have been going on for a while now. My home state of New Jersey, governor's like, we're not doing that anymore. It's like there's an election coming up and some of that stuff.
Good on them.
It just tells you that it was all about politics.
Yeah,
that's the frustrating thing. It's like it had zero to do with our health and everything to do about keeping you in power, and that's frustrating. Anyway, we're not going to live on the sour train today. We're going to be in a good space.
No bumming out. Nice and inspirational.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Best version of yourself.
Correct. So how's Joe? How was last week? I know we missed each other last week a bit. What's going on?
This has been whirlwind. There's so many exciting things going on.
Yeah.
And just when I think like I'm maxed out and can't do anymore, I do more. And then I'm like, oh, I can do more. I always think of Goggins where the, you know,
you're
not
40% done. Yeah. You think you're done.
Totally,
you're not.
Totally inspire me there.
Yeah. So your wife opened a new store, which is super cool. And I've seen some posts and stuff on Facebook, but what is it? What's she doing? I know it's kind of her happy spot. So,
yeah. So we have that law of use thing that goes on in our house where we're constantly looking at things that are just accumulating and whether or not we should part ways with some of this stuff. And so we had a real heart to heart on some things that needed to vacate and move out. And she agreed totally that there's some stuff that doesn't have sentimental value. It's not bringing joy.
Sure.
It needs to go away. And rather than part ways in the garbage can, which would be a shame on some of these things, decided to throw them up on shelves, open up the store, and let her sell her treasures to people. And
they say that one man's trash is another man's treasure.
That's it. And what people buy, I don't understand it, but they buy a lot of it. So
what have people bought? Like, has she sold a bunch of stuff or
tons?
Yeah.
Tons of stuff. And so like she has a smattering of all kinds of different collectibles, like baseball cards. Uh-huh. And I thought baseball cards, they're going to sell, right?
Nothing.
No baseball cards. The ones that we put on the shelf are still on the shelf. So I'm kind of watching to see what these people are buying. And it's more like decorative ornamental. Whatever.
Yeah. I got you.
Ornate.
Yeah, there it is.
Like glassware and ceramics and stuff that you would never think, like stuff that sits on a shelf and is pretty, but doesn't really have any use. Oh, I'm taking a shot at her stuff now. Thanks a lot. But anyway, that kind of stuff.
Grandma he didn't mean had that, Deb.
In her curio cabinet. Thing, so.
Yeah, we have a china set. So when Sam and I got married, my dad had multiple china sets because his mom had collected china sets, and so she bought them back in the 40s and 50s and all sorts of cool stuff. And so I said to my wife, I said, you know, pick out whichever one you want. And my brother Dom was getting married at the same time, so we all looked at, you know, the multiple sets and said, do you want this one or this one? And I think he picked out like a gold hand-painted set made in like East Germany or something like that. It was kind of wild, from like the 1940s, which is cool. We picked out this really nice Japanese looking set. You know, it had the nice ornamental flowers and such on it. And it was made in Philadelphia in the 1950s. And so we've looked it up and it has value, but nobody has a whole set of it. So I looked at, you know, guys on, Antique Roadshow. I looked for people that specified in China. I called a couple of antique shops and places, and most of those places will sell like replacement settings, you know, play setting or a replacement plate or a teacup. I'm like, I have 18 teacups. I have like 12 plates and like I have all the saucers and the dishes, like 97, you know, pieces all together. And they're like, to sell a whole set is really difficult to do. So a lot of people take the old stuff like that and they'll break it down because people have the set, but they broke a plate here, broke something there, and they'll want to buy and they'll spend $40 or $50 on a plate, which is interesting. So talking about the ornamental side of the glassware and those things in the curio cabinet, you know, I can think back to my parents' collection because they inherited it from my grandma. You know, they had the Lennox, you know, little figurines and different, and the plates and stuff like that. So I definitely see where there's a market for that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I do not hold on to stuff. So yeah. She loves her treasures, but I'm like, am I going to use it in the next 10 minutes? Because if I don't, am I not going to use it in 10 minutes? I'm going to lose track of it. And when I look for it, I'm going to be really mad that I can't find it. So I'm really quick on getting rid of stuff and just buying a new one if I need it sometime in the future.
So you're not sentimental in that regard?
Not with physical things. No way.
Okay. Do you have anything that holds like something that maybe you inherited from a grandfather? Nothing like that?
Zero things. Like there's one thing, like my grandfather's lunch pail, right? I have it on my shelf and it, you know, because it was a different era, in the mill, working harder than I will ever work in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so it encapsulates sort of like a feeling more than the sentiment of it being his. It means something that way.
Yeah. So you keep it for inspiration's sake.
For sure.
Sure. It totally makes sense. You know, my dad passed, you know, I have his humidor downstairs cause he smokes cigars and it's in a box somewhere now. But when he first passed, I would, every once in a while when I was missing him, I would pull it out and I could smell the cigars and it reminded me of my dad. You know, I didn't necessarily, I don't have cigars in it. It's empty. You know, it still works. It's got the little, you know, gauge on it to tell you how humid the box is and, you know, whether you should keep cigars in it or what you need to do. I'm not even sure how it totally works, but I know it keeps them from going stale and going bad. And he had it for years. The you know, those sort of things, you know, I have some of those things that I think down the road, I'm like, maybe my kids are like that. My wife is very much wired like you, where she's like, why do you have your dad's high school diploma in this thing? Like, it's just sitting in a box taking up room. And I'm like, one day we're going to look at this one more time and then we'll throw it out. You know, like, I get it. It is. But you know, even my own stuff, like I have, you know, picture albums and yearbooks and all kinds of stuff. And some of that's a little nostalgic and you can pull it out every once in a while and go, oh man, I totally remember, you know, looking at old, you know, I have all my newspaper clippings from when our, you know, my senior year, our baseball team went 18-4 and, you know, the different pictures and, you know, I was on the, you know, in the newspaper for, you know, certain performances and stuff in terms of baseball. That's really cool to go back and look at every once in a while. But realistically, my kids are going to look at it when I'm dead and they're going to go, oh, dad played baseball.
And 30 years of protecting it from being thrown it's out. True. And it will be in the heap pile of the garbage.
You know, I think of, you know, the stuff that I went through when my dad passed, you know, we went through thousands of pictures and we went through all kinds of just stuff that he had saved that, you know, we knew was important to dad. And we were like, I don't know why this is important. And how much stuff we pitched. And you helped salvage some pictures off his computer and some stuff off the hard drive for me through Youngstown Computers. But, you know, really, other than, you know, some digital pictures and some pictures of him with the kids, his humidor and some things, I kept his tennis rackets. My dad played tennis. And maybe one day the kids and I'll use those at some point, but right now they're collecting dust in the basement.
You're feeling guilty. I see the guilt on your face.
There's a little bit of, I don't think there's anything wrong. And I think there's a tension here between honoring what was and being sentimental. And I think there's a real tension between, you know, sentimentality tries to hold on to the past and not change. We're honoring, for me, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the stuff, but being able to honor my dad's memory and legacy, being able to look back on those principles using the lunch pail like you do to draw inspiration for the future, I think is a healthy way to do that. Holding on for holding on's sake, I think as I'm getting older, you know, it's kind of silly. My dad and I used to have this discussion all the time. He used to say, he's like, when I'm dead, you know, you're going to come to the cemetery and talk to me, right? Because he used to go and visit his mom all the time. And I thought it was the weirdest thing growing up as a kid. And I was like, no. I was like, once you're in the ground, like,
you're not there anymore.
Yeah. If all that I believe is true, hopefully you're in a much better place, and you don't care whether I'm showing up to sit under a tree and have a conversation with you. Right. But there is that presence of mind that some people have, and they'll, you know, and for some people it brings closure. I'm not talking about the grief process. You know, right. Sometimes people need that right. to go to the grave and have those things. But, you know, my grandmother died in 1988, and in 2000 and whatever, my dad was still taking flowers, and still he would go and sit on her birthday, and he would do those things. It was important to him, but it was almost, you know, at times looking back now, like there's just some, yeah, it's one thing to honor. It's one thing to go, you know what, Mom, I'm going to do better in the future because of you. But, you know, I've never once since my dad passed been like, man, you know, really want to sit under the tree and have a conversation with, you know, the headstone on the ground or whatever. You know, I want to do my best to impart the best of him to my kids and to the future. And I love that lunch pail kind of picture that you have there.
I don't know if my method is healthy or not. I still haven't figured out because I really have desensitized myself to the past, and, you know, having guilt and regret makes it so that I can sever what's happened and not really pay attention to it much, which means that, you know, emotional connections between something going up in a blaze, like it wouldn't faze me at all, like no connection.
But some of that's your wiring, I think, as a person.
So, well, some of it's a choice too, because sure. if I don't put something on a pedestal and make mm-hmm. it my reason for being, then it kind of falls away, and, you know, I could do without it and be just as happy, you know, without.
Sure. Yeah. I would agree. It's both and, but I think most, your natural bent is in one direction, and then you choose to go in that direction right. as well. Where I think for a lot of people, their natural bent is to be sentimental, is to hold on, is to reach back and into the past. And so it's difficult for them to let go and move into the future.
When I'm going through that same box that you are, the logical brain is what's engaged, and I'm doing yeah. math about the likelihood that I'm going to use it, how much I really want to hang on to it, what the emotional cost it is to carrying it versus getting rid of it. And then when you're going through that box, it's a probably different engagement, right?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, you're going through, you know, I was cleaning up the basement. We rearranged some stuff in the basement because my brother-in-law and his kids came over, and I knew we'd be down there playing ping pong and, you know, hanging out. We didn't hang out down there as much as I thought we would, but, you know, we got it straightened and cleaned up, and, you know, it needed to be cleaned up anyway, but you're like, oh, you know what? People are coming over. I guess we should vacuum, you know, and stuff like that. So particularly the basement, you know, upstairs, my wife knocks it out of the park, but the basement, it's kind of like, nobody's ever down here. So, but we went down there, and my brother had taken my dad's table tennis paddles, his ping pong paddles. If he heard me say ping pong, he'd be rolling over in his grave. You know, his table tennis paddles, and he had two or three of those, and he was a very good table tennis player, and he ran the table tennis club. We would go early when I was a kid, and we'd set up the tables in the community center on Thursday nights, and we played table tennis because dad and the gentlemen, most of them, you know, grandpas and a few other men, you know, they would play very competitively, and they would stick us kids like on the half broken table on the end and be like, you know, guys, figure it out. And so that's kind of where the space we grew up in. And so, yeah, moving those ping pong paddles, my brain goes back to, I can smell the community center, had a very distinct smell, and looking at those paddles, I'm like, you know, it makes me want to get out and hit some ping pong balls. You know, where you look at that and go, when's the last time I played ping pong?
When will be the next time
I play ping pong? Exactly. My wife asked me those same questions, and I'm like,
somebody's got to keep you in check. My brother.
I'm like, it doesn't matter. I was like, if I play it again in 5 years or 10 years, I'm going to have these paddles to play it with.
You're going to sleep knowing that you're prepared for an impromptu game of ping pong.
I have my own paddles too. That's the whole thing. I have two of my own paddles that I had through college. I have my net measurer. I have everything to, I bought like a $60 net that's got the weighted anchors on either side, so it keeps it tight. It's nice. I hit with the kids some, but I don't.
Yeah, it's like, but you use it. But you're not breaking the rule.
Well, I don't use my paddle. My paddle's very expensive. I only use.
You don't want to use the good paddle. Yeah, this is the China conversation.
I use the junk paddles. Yeah. It's exactly right.
Rick says pretty much all we have are pictures, dad's humidor, and mom's recipes. And also, I am almost embarrassed to say I am not sure where my folks' graves are. Their memory is in my soul
yep.
and my brain. That's the proper way of doing
it. That's 100%. And Rick's dad is a cigar smoker, and I know Rick likes a good cigar every once in a while, so it's good. My dad used to, when I went on my honeymoon, we brought back a few gifts for people. And one of the things that I brought back for my dad was like, before I left, he goes, you know, you're going to Mexico. You could get me a Cuban cigar. And I was like, I could. So I was like, but isn't that, I was like,
cross the board.
I was like, isn't that illegal? Yeah. You know, type deal. And he goes, just take the ring off the cigar and fold it up and put it in your wallet. Because they'll never know.
But here's the thing. They're going to ask you at the border, do you have anything? And you'll buckle, man. You will not be able to take.
Well, I had all of it in my carry on. I got him two Cuban cigars. They were like $20 a piece. But he said they were some of the best cigars he ever smoked. They didn't ask me any questions. So I,
Thank goodness.
I just kept trucking and he was excited to have them. And I pulled the rings out and put them back on so that he could have his Cuban cigars.
So I got to talk, not to switch subjects or anything, but I got to talk to a doctor. Like for those of you who haven't listened before, I have weird nutritional and diet things that I go through. And I got some input on a non-friendly. This was a person that you could tell did not like what I was doing.
Oh,
okay. And I got some advice where I was able to draw some of the stuff was just, you know, they wanted to battle me and, you know, make me look foolish. But there was a couple things that I started doing.
So we should bring them on the program is what you're saying.
So good. It'd be so good. Because the thing is, you could tell there was so much they wanted to say because it's me and they did not say it. They did not confront. And it was weird watching a doctor weigh out what they're going to say in front of me. But a couple of the updates they did, they recommended that when I do what I do, that you take cold showers. Mm-hmm. And so for the last week, I've taken cold showers.
I've heard that over and over, that cold showers is the best thing for your blood pressure and best thing for.
Like, I do nothing but laugh because when I do the cold shower, it is so awful that the whole time I'm thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this. And it makes me giggle in the shower all the time. That's been the only fallout is that I take 30-second showers now. And they're all me just laughing the whole time I'm taking.
This is going to be the picture our audience has at the end of the show is Joe giggling in the shower in a cold shower. I've heard that very much. And I've tried the cold shower thing before and it gets old after about one shower.
It sucks, but I keep doing it.
But they say it's really good for your skin. It's good for circulation. It's good for a ton of things. I've seen a bunch of, and I've read like actual like articles and research on it that supposedly it's really, really good for you. They say if you have anxiety, one of the things that you can do, so you people who struggle to keep their breathing, heart rate, all that stuff in check because their anxiety goes up, one of the best things you can do, there's two things. You can clench your butt like you're going to poop because the motion of that muscle actually draws blood there and away from your heart and lowers your heart rate. So if you're ever having an elevated heart rate and you're trying to bring it down, you can clench that like you're trying to go to the bathroom on and off, and it'll actually bring your heart rate down 5 to 10 points pretty quickly. But the other thing they tell you to do is to wash your face with cold water because the cold water releases certain things on the inside of you, that temperature, and actually causes your anxiety and your heart rate to lower, which is kind of interesting.
But it's strange though. Like you know, in some of these cases, we do this stuff and they always take away your favorite thing, right? Like if you're like, I could take all the foods that I really like. And if I were to guess which one I need to stop doing,
everybody knows. Be that one. Or just like, doc, tell me no more happiness. Okay.
So in the morning, if I spend 30 minutes in a boiling hot shower, cause I love it. They're like, I know what you need to do for health is take a cold shower. So I'm not going to tell my doctor what I'm doing or what I like anymore, because that's the thing that I think he's keying in on.
There's a comedian that does a whole thing on that. He's like, doctor says I need to eat more fruit. So I bought Pop-Tarts and he goes his whole rant. It's pretty funny. But, you know, and that's interesting. I actually did some research and am trying a new vitamin D supplement. So I had like the standard over-the-counter, you know, Nature Made, whatever vitamin D stuff. And it was fine. It seemed to reflect in my blood work and stuff that my vitamin D was up. But with all the talk of vitamin D deficiency and right now with it being winter, it's challenging for some folks to keep it up. So I did some research and I got a all natural one. I ordered off of Amazon and it comes with K2 vitamin because K2 helps you absorb vitamin D. So I did a little bit of research, but it's actually made with like a coconut thing. It's supposedly like a vegan tablet or whatever, and so I'm going to try and see what happens in my next round of blood work. But it's much bigger than I'm used to, but it's 5,000 units, and then the K2 is supposed to help you absorb more of it.
Well, so that was the second thing my doctor said. He said I was way overdoing it, and the vitamin D3, because I gave him my litany of everything that I'm taking, and he said the vitamin D I was taking like, I don't know, 12 times the recommended dosage, sure. and I need to dial that way back. And I get my K2 from cheese. So hard cheese does okay. the same thing. And I don't like taking as many pills as I, or, you know, more pills than I need sure. to. So I'm trying to like dairy it. Like I don't do much dairy, but hard cheese, I will do that all day long.
Like and then, Parmesan and what else?
Brie, mozzarella, stinky, anything stinky. And I'm all about it.
Nice.
The visuals tonight, the visuals.
Yes, the visuals. Joe laughing in the shower mm-hmm. and anything stinky.
Eating stinky cheese while laughing in the shower.
Okay. So I've tried that. And then my wife and I, we take like the standard multivitamin type deal. But I really like the fish oil that I found. I've tried a couple different kinds and they didn't sit right, or, you know, they'd make you gassy or bad aftertaste. And I found this one that's wild Alaskan salmon DHA fish oil. It's a little bit more expensive than your Nature Made or whatever, but I ordered it. And the first round of this, like, I feel like I've had no issue stomach wise or any of that stuff. And so I actually just bought a second container of it. So I'm interested to see where my levels will be on some of that stuff that Doc has me on. So.
Yeah, let me know on that, because I'm always looking for some good fish oil, cod liver, or whatever. Yeah. It's hard to find good stuff that, you know, doesn't taste crappy. Like, you get the fish taste is the one thing that gets super old super fast.
Yeah, they try and like, oh, it's lemon, and it's like, nah.
No. And you know, I like sardines. I like, you know, I like fishy stuff, but you do too many days in a row. Same thing with coconut. Like, if you do coconut too many mm-hmm. days, it gets old.
I get heartburn with too much coconut. Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't sit well with my stomach. So I'm not I like coconut. But if I do too much of it, it's like,
Interesting stuff, right?
Interesting. So you're doing, I know you were doing some running regimen, and we talked about that a week or two ago. What is going on with that? Has that been ongoing?
I totally checked out of the whole running scene. I've been.
Because I know you killed it on vacation. You were loving it down in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been like negative 97 degrees
I'll do treadmill, but I don't like it. I like being outside. That's my favorite part about it. So to do it, I'm not all about. And as far as like, I went out of keto when I first got back. I really stocked up on like the nutrients and did a whole bunch of protein and really went off the charts as trying to, you know, to really fill in the gaps where when I'm in starvation and fasting and whatever, that I need to add some of that stuff back in it from time to time. So, but I started fasting today. So I'm about 24 hours in on this one.
And how are you feeling?
It's not great. I mean, the first one coming back, you feel pretty bad. So you could own me pretty good if you wanted to.
No. Yeah. Do you, in your regiment with all of your food stuff, do you do any dark chocolate ever or any of that? What do you do for a sweet kick? Do you do anything? Nothing.
No, because things lower on that scale become your sweet kick. And so I can do something like that wouldn't even register on the sweet scale mm-hmm. for most people. That ends up being it. Most of the time it's like brie. There's like a fig, like a fig dip in mm-hmm. a brie.
Yeah.
The fig is like off the charts. And so that's my substitute.
Gotcha. That's cool. Well, we just had some family in, and I have something to admit. I had never taken my kids sledding.
Never.
I feel like a horrible dad.
What the heck?
But so it took my brother-in-law and sister-in-law flying in from Florida with their kids who had never seen snow to get us actually out and enjoying the snow. So we had a lot of fun in the snow. We threw snowballs. We played in the snow. The kids did all kinds of stuff. And then Sunday after church, we were like, man, it's like 37 degrees. Like, it warmed up a bit. The sun was out. We're like, we should try and go sledding. So we text few people. I think Sam put something up on Facebook maybe or something, and somebody's like, you got to go to Wick Park at in Mill Creek. I was like, oh, okay. Oh yeah, they got the two hills there. We're doing the math, and someone was like, oh, you should check this out. Went by the first spot, we're like, because Wick Park's like about a 20-minute drive. We're like, we don't want to get all the way over there, and the kids have never sled, and we don't want them to not like it and us be standing out there in the cold with cranky kids. They stinking loved it.
Yes.
It was hours of just fun, and we got some great video. So of course we started out and everybody kind of wanted to, you know, let's partner up, and did a couple runs down with mom, a couple runs down with each other, and then Benjamin's our daredevil, and he was just like, I'm going by myself. He jumped on that thing and took off and came up smiling, wanted to continue going down, and my brother-in-law's kid, same thing. We had like three sleds, but we had these inflatable sleds that my mom had bought us 7 years ago. They've been sitting in the closet. I'm going, one day I'm going to use these, Joe. And that was the day.
Paid off.
Well, it was huge. They had these like to blow up the thing. It wasn't like your normal like little nipple, because these things were like heavy duty. They were thick. And so my brother-in-law and I are like, trying to blow these things up, and like both getting lightheaded and everything.
I passed out twice.
I eventually put down the one, and we just blew up. There's a picture of me on a rainbow unicorn, because that's what we blew up. Nice. And we had a blast going down the hill with that. But it was so fun to watch my kids engage with a new thing like that and just go all in on it. And then by the end of it, there was like a little ramp on the one side, and they went over it and did jumps and stuff. And it was cool. And we ran into some people we knew, which was fun. But yeah, for the most part, I was up at the top just shoving kids down the hill.
Can I share a story with you? Just sort of in the same vein.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure that my parents didn't care if I died. Because at the age that Ryan is right now, I can remember like just leaving and like walking 2 miles to the golf course and not going down like a regular safe hill, but going down hills that were like on the side of ledges, going down over rivers. And I'm thinking like there was never any kind of parental oversight into the bad decisions that we, you know, made, but never. Like there's not a single time like, huh, you know what? We went down one called Ball Buster. Right. And, and there was not apparent insight in any direction.
Yeah. So they just, sent,
didn't care.
They just sent you to your death. And they were like, you know,
and like Ryan will walk a block over to do some sled riding on a hill that's close by, but we were walking miles away, and parents didn't care or know where we were.
If he dies, he dies.
He dies, right? He wasn't strong enough to join the pack.
Yeah, it was that George Carlin back in the day. He says, you know, he goes, whatever happened to natural selection? He's like, what happened to the kid who ate too many marbles doesn't get to go on to the next grade? And, in classic, you know, George Carlin fashion, I think, you know, that sort of stuff. But it's interesting as parents, the way my parents, Charlotte and I were having this conversation, you know, waiting for the school bus. And I was like, you're actually not that far from school. And I was trying to do the math. She's about a mile. And I was like, I was about 3/4 of a mile from my middle school. And we walked to school. I met my friends, got on bikes, and we rode to school. And my parents, I didn't have a cell phone or anything like that.
In a million years, you would not go down ever.
No.
And it's not any more or less dangerous. No, it's not. Now.
That's the whole thing. And when I was even the way the conversation started was I was like, all the buses pick the kids up at their house. And I'm like, no wonder it takes them 97 years to pick everybody up. I said, we had one stop on the street and 20 kids walked to that one stop and you hung out. And if you had a problem with somebody, as soon as you got off the bus, you had a fist fight at the bus stop and you settled it. But, you know, we had a we went down. I think our stop was like 4 or 5 houses on the corner. And I don't know, there was 8 or 10 of us. And we met up at that stop and you became friends with those people. You played sports with them. You had a great time with it.
So our audience wants to know, how many fist fights at the bus stop did Doug Reed have?
I never had a fist fight.
I'm not surprised, and nor are any of the people listening right now.
No, Joe, I told you, one lunch detention in all the years of school. I got in a few scuffles like playing sports, but that was more like testosterone flaring up, you know, backyard football. We weren't fighting because we were like pissed at each other. We were just in the heat of the game and somebody cheap shot at somebody and you gave him a sucker punch or whatever and you moved on. You know, but I never had a true legit you know, fist fight. I had it, like I said, a few scuffles, you know, playing backyard football or basketball or something like that, and somebody laid somebody out and then you got up and you let them know. So it's part of the deal. I do that with the boys though sometimes. Like they'll come to me and be like, oh, he held me or whatever, and I'm like, well, tell him about it. Like, yeah, like, what are you coming to me about it? Like, I'm not going to referee. You need to figure out how to negotiate with your own brother. And it's interesting because, and then you watch them negotiate, and it's funny to watch which one caves and which one asserts dominance. And it's not always the one you think. You know, I've watched Ben and Graham several times. Graham immediately is like, all right, Ben, we'll do it this way. And we'll give Ben what he wants. And he'll try and negotiate his. So he tries to make it a win-win that I'm going to get what I want. Like I scored the point, but all right, you can have a first down at the 50-yard line instead of, and they try and do this negotiation. But my dad, he would have come in and be like, Don fouled me. He'd be like, he would have said a few choice words that I won't say on the podcast, but you know, and he would have told me to go back outside and call me a pansy and go play.
Here's my story associated with this, because this was one of the dumber things that I've heard, because it did not work out in anybody's favor. So there was one of my siblings were being picked on at school. He was considerably younger than me. And so I was an adult by the time, mm-hmm. you know, he was doing his thing. And I decided to stand up for him at school. Not only like the guy was pretty rough mm-hmm. on him, and I was kind of taking it personal, but it never occurred to me that I might make things worse by doing that stand-in thing, because I wasn't going to be able to be there, you know, at any given time. So here's me going into a school, right, to pick a fight with a person that is under the age of 18. Like, I know by today's standards that an adult's not going to just get into a school, but I did at the time. Yeah. And so, like, I stood up there, and I regret that. That's one of the few things that I feel like I made things worse. It was a terrible decision. And if I could go back in time, that's probably like the only thing that I would go back and undo, because I not only made it worse for their experience, but they didn't get the chance to stand up for themselves in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm a bad person.
Not necessarily. I say there's only one way to deal with a bully, to punch them in the mouth. I mean, and that's the truth of it. Like, you can negotiate with bullies, you can talk with bullies, you know, but ultimately, you know, yeah, exhaust every diplomatic option that you want to, but the fastest way to handle that is to handle
punch
it
in the mouth. Yeah,
and
it's over quick. Like,
it is. And I think I've said to our kids on a few occasions where Graham had an issue on the bus. There was a kid that the kid was being totally innocent and funny, but Graham was not receiving it that way.
Right.
And he was frustrated about it. I said, well, have you talked to him about it? He goes, yeah, I've asked him to stop. I said, all right. I said, well, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go in. And I said, I bet he just thinks it's funny and other kids are laughing. And so they're just having a good time, and it sucks because they're having a good time at your expense. I was like, try and have a conversation, just you and him, when nobody else is around. And that's not Graham's sweet spot by any means. And I don't know if he did or he didn't, but at some point I said, if that doesn't work, I said, talk with your bus driver. And he kept wanting me to insert myself. And I kept going, I'm not going to fight your fights for you. Like, as dad, I'm equipping you with the tools. You go and talk to him, then you can have a conversation with your bus driver. Well, I don't. And there are no. You're either going to continue to not like this, or you're going to deal with it. And I feel like a lot of parents want to swoop in and protect their kids from stuff like this. Charlotte had an issue a while back with one of her teachers that she didn't think something was fair. I said, all right, we'll go have a conversation with your teacher. Well, can you call her? No. Yeah, but this is going to affect my grade. I'm sorry. Your grade, your problem.
Yep.
And she does not like confrontation at all. And so for her, she'd rather die and take a zero on an assignment before she'd have that conversation.
Now, are you good at confrontation?
Yeah, I love confrontation. Right. Absolutely. For me, confrontation, I have learned, I shouldn't say that, I've grown to appreciate the results of confrontation, healthy confrontation. I don't seek out confrontation just for the sake of confrontation, but I've had plenty of people, you know, particularly I deal with a lot of it. I've had couples that are on the verge of divorce. I've had all of that. And I've had people that have not been up, that have been upset with decisions I've made at various times and various things. And I'm married. I have conflict from time to time with my wife. So you being uncomfortable in conflict, you don't go seeking a fight out, but you don't run from it either. And the hard part is, I think in teaching my kids that, you know, there are times where I'm just like, you know, Charlotte, I need you to go do this for yourself. Like, I can't do this for you. I want to, like, as a dad, like, yeah, I don't want this to affect you, and I want you to fix this. But if I do it, I'm going to handicap you for later in life. Sure. And it's the same thing with Graham and Ben, you know, playing football in the front yard. Like, I'm not going to come out and referee every play. Like, you guys need to figure it out, have a conversation, negotiate it. If you need to wrestle it out or whatever, figure it out. But when you get up, you know, and you leave the field, you're brothers, you hug each other and you move on. And it's fun to watch the maturity happen in them at 7 and 6 and 10, because there are plenty of adults that I deal with that don't know how to do that. There are plenty of married couples that sure. I deal with that don't know how to do that, because either someone always did it, or they always ran from it, or they overcompensated. You know, I have plenty of guys that I've dealt with, particularly some ladies too, that are just always looking for a fight. And I'm like, do you just always want to have a conflict? Like, but that's all they knew is healthy. They watched mom and dad argue all the time, and that's what love looked like. And so they bring that into their own relationships with their kids and everything else. And so to understand that, hey, conflict's part of life, and if we do it healthy, we get great results. I mean, honestly, the best conflict will drive you to a deeper place of intimacy with that person. When you overcome that conflict together, all of a sudden it's like, wow, we succeeded at that. Like, we overcame something that we didn't want to, that wasn't fun. It actually brought us a good deal of discomfort and pain. But on the other side of this, I'm so glad we dealt with it.
So Sam is, I'm assuming, the not the conflict person. She does not like conflict.
No, she is a primary flight person. But she's gotten much better. I mean, you know, we'll be the end of this month on the 27th. We'll have been together dating everything for 20 years, which is kind of crazy. Nice. We'll be married 13 in April, but together for 20. And after being together all that time, she does a pretty good job of navigating certain things. There are times where she'll bottle and then she'll come back with it. But for the most part, we've really learned how to navigate conflict. And I am more naturally a fighter. Hey, let's handle this. We're not going to bed till this is settled type deal. And I've learned to give space so that she can process, because she needs to process. And so I've had to say, all right, we're going to deal with this, but we're going to do it in a healthy way. Now, my dad was a fighter and my mom was flight. And I watched him, you know, obliterate, not in a, necessarily in a physical way, but just annihilate the room. And my whole life, like, he thought that that was asserting some sort of leadership or dominance. And I learned very quickly that that's not leadership or dominance. You're actually just insecure. And out of your insecurity, you're bursting into anger. And people are doing things because they're on eggshells for you, not because they respect you and not right. because they actually want to do what you're asking them to do. And so as Sam and I've grown as a couple, I've learned to navigate her unwillingness sometimes to enter the conflict by giving her the space, sometimes letting her pick the field that we have the conversation on, or, you know, all right, you don't want to have it now. Well, when can we have it? And vice versa. There are times where she knows that, hey, I'm low energy right now. We can't have that conversation. I need time to collect myself. All right. Tuesday tonight when I get home is our finance night. We sit down, we handcuff ourselves to the kitchen table after the kids go to bed, and we hammer through our weekly budget. We look at the bills that are coming up. We look at our investments. We look at the things. All right, how's that doing? Do we need to rearrange this? And sometimes for her, that's stressful. And sometimes for me, it's energy depleting because it's detail driven. And so, but having a routine and having a schedule to know, all right, we're going to come to the table. I'm not leaving this table until it's done. I'll prepare mentally to be in that space, and so will she. And so even if there's conflict, because she never wants to spend anything, and zero risk is always the best spot to be. And I'm like, let's go all in and risk everything, and we can do this and we can try that. And I'm up for that. And so we have to find some sort of middle ground in that space. And so that's probably a routine point of conflict in a good way that we come together to, you know, solve that issue for us.
So here's an observation. So in the business world, the ratio has always been askew, where I see how far people will go to avoid conflict.
Yeah.
And you would think in the business
realm, people quit jobs, people will move, people are crazy.
Yeah. And so in a competitive space, you would think that they're more, you know, bluster and whatever. No. And it's not, it's the other direction.
Yep.
But here's what I'm seeing about the next generation. So when it comes to conflict, they're, because they're social media, you know, sort of like
passive aggressive.
Yeah. So they will fight at the drop of a hat when it comes to the internet, where they don't have to eyeball. So they are super aggressive on the extroverted side.
That internet strength. Mm-hmm.
You get them in person, right?
Yep.
And they will wait to fight with you online. It'll be the totally suspension of do it to your face. Now, see, I like, you know, have it out right now. I don't have time to let this carry into tomorrow. Let's punch each other and get it done with and move on, right? I don't care if we're digital or whatever. I'm with you. I don't really like to fight, but I became good at it over the years. But good at it in a way of making sure we take it to the level where it ends today, so it doesn't carry. Yeah. Little spatterings, not enough.
Right. And it's always got to be a win-win. When I leave the table, like, I want it to be a win-win. I'm not just in the fight to come away and say, oh, I got my way, but let's figure out a way that this can be a home run for both of us. In some cases, it can't be. And you have to be okay with that scenario. I think on the other side of the conflict, you know, you talk about, I want it done today. You know, I say this quite frequently, but like, bad news and conflict and all of this doesn't age like wine. No. It ages like milk.
Yes.
And so it's like, I want to get it out of the way. Like, so if there's an issue, like, come tell me, all right, yep, that's going sour real fast. We need to adjust midstream. We need to fix our sales. We're going to figure out a way forward. And I think the other side of it is, and I've been a big proponent of this, face to face, voice to voice, screen to screen. So anytime I want to communicate anything important, it should be face to face. And if I can't have face to face, it should be voice to voice. Pick up the phone and call somebody. And then last resort is screen to screen. Screen to screen is great for like, hey, you're coming at 9 o'clock, right? You're going to be on time for that. Can you pick up lettuce? Like, that's screen to screen is good for that stuff. I should not be giving people instructions for that. And I've been guilty of it at times where, hey, you know, it's just easier to text this out. But ultimately, if it's important, I should make time to be face to face.
If I'm mad at you, I'm going to keep calling you until you don't pick up, and I'm going to leave it on your voicemail so I don't have to hit you face to face. Just kidding.
Oh, so when I see them, ignore Joe.
Damn, he picked up again. How's them Eagles?
Yeah, not good right now. They're at home. Well, I mean, I guess they're doing good. They're probably in Florida fishing and all that. Do you have a pick for Sunday, by the way? Super Bowl Sunday?
I'm going with the Bengals only because I don't want to see OBJ get a ring. I'm a little salty.
Spiteful. It's fine. Yeah. A little salty about that. I don't have a dog in the fight. I really hope it's a good game. I hope it goes to overtime and somebody wins by a field goal or something like that, because all the games have been so awesome. It'd be awesome to see.
Not contrived. Like, they haven't been fixing the game so that they'd be super exciting into double overtime.
I've never seen a playoffs like this, you know, in my lifetime. The playoffs have all been decided by less than 7 points and overtime or last play of the game, almost all of them.
Yep. So, need some attendance, need some excitement in there.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting that, you know, my wife keeps asking me, what are we doing for the Super Bowl? What are we doing for the Super Bowl? I'm like, well, and we've had some invites to go different places, but it's my birthday on Sunday, and I'm super excited for that. Beautiful. We're going out Thursday night. We're gonna go to Aqua Plaza. So I'm very excited for some butter cake and all the things. It's gonna
be
great.
I'm fasting, right? Like, doing this is not a fair thing.
No, it's not.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'll send you pictures. Sunday, she keeps going, what are we doing for the Super Bowl? I'm like, don't you mean, what are you doing for my birthday? I keep having the fun with that.
Yes.
But I don't know what we're going to do. I was like, I haven't really decided. I was like, I'm not like, woo. You know, it's not like the Eagles are playing or something like that. You know, I'm going to watch the game. My boys are pumped to watch the game. They're like, we're staying up to watch the game. So I don't know what I'm going to end up doing Sunday night for the game. But I hope the Bengals win. I think that's my...
All right, back to the social media fighting. So, if you had a battle on social media with anybody in the last 6 months, have you experienced?
Last 6 months?
Yeah.
No, because the Lord keeps me from posting comments on stupid things. There are times where I want to engage, and I'm just like, I think through like 5 steps later, and I'm like, so I'm going to post this. They're going to post that. They're still not going to do that. I'm going to get called a name. This person's going to chime in, and then I'm going to be like, this is stupid. I'm wasting my time on this, and I don't post. It's typically the way it goes in my brain. And so there have been a number of times where I've written posts out, and I'm like, I really want to post this. And I'm like, I'm not going to post that. I do more on social media. I'm trying to keep it more positive, uplifting. You know, I post a few things here and there that I think are funny, or you know, maybe even a little snarky towards some of the silliness politically and some of the stuff that's going on. But I would say 90% is I'm trying to keep it inspirational, high end, and so I try not to engage with the silliness that is comments on public posts and Boardman Talk. And that's, there's been plenty of stuff I'm like, I want to post.
I've been like, bomb thrown, man. I have nothing to, I mean, I've been sandwiching it with some inspirational stuff, but I would really,
I've noticed.
I don't know what's up. I've been in a funk, and maybe it's because of the no exercise and diet. I got this pent up negativity that I need to go outside. And
well, maybe you need to take longer than a 30-second cold shower. Maybe that'll
and so, yeah, maybe I'll get back into it, and I'll go back to optimistic. But for now, I'm getting all this, I don't know, toxins out of my liver or something. I don't know where it's coming from.
Let's go on Boardman Talk for a half hour. You'll have
fun. Right. But what I noticed is they people don't fight fun anymore. Like, it's basically what I'm doing, like single grenade, and then they run away. They don't want to continue the stupid talk. They just...
Well, and the whole thing is nobody is on the internet to have their mind changed, is the conclusion I've come to. So if I can inspire people to take steps forward in their life, if I can inspire them, you know, to have a better relationship with their spouse, if I can inspire them to spend more time with their kids, if I can do that, great. But I'm not going to go on there and switch somebody from political parties. I'm not going to go on there and convince somebody that I have the, you know, have solved the world's problem when it comes to, you know, the border or whatever. Like, I just, you know, the issues that everybody gets hot and bothered about. Like, I just look at that and I go, I don't have time for this. And there was a season for a while where I engaged a lot. And my wife was like, why do you do that to yourself? And I would be like, mad. Like, I'm like, these people are stupid. I don't know why everybody doesn't think like me. And you get frustrated.
Yeah.
And I just came to the place where I'm like, I don't have time for that. My heart doesn't have time for that. My head doesn't have time for that. And so I'm just going to stay focused on the things I need to focus on. I'm going to post the stuff that I like and I feel passionate about. Like, I twice almost made a post about Joe Rogan and everything going on with that, because I feel a certain way about it. And as I was writing it, I'm like, you know, is this going to help further the conversation, or is this just going to pull people out and they're going to have an argument on my stream and I'm going to get some comments and stuff like that? But ultimately, I'm not going to change anybody's opinion about this. And it's not like I know Joe personally, you know what I mean? It'd be different if it was Joe Danier that was being targeted. Well, then, yeah, I'm going to make a post. Exactly. But like, I've never met Joe Rogan. Like, I happen to think his podcast is awesome. I love that, you know, he sticks his neck out there and has all kinds of diverse people. And there are a ton of people that I don't agree with that he's interviewed. And I just love that he's willing to do that. And then for him to get, you know, chucked under the bus here, just goes to show you it's not about him. It's not about either the doctors that he interviewed. It's not about Neil Young even. But it's literally about censorship and free speech. And it's just like, you know, part of me is like, well, fine, you know, you want to play that card. And, you know, we'll just continue down this path. And I don't know if you saw, but Rumble offered him $100 million to come over and be on their platform or whatever. Like, he's gonna have a space, right? Daily Wire will pick him up, someone will pick him up, and he will have, and he'll bring a gajillion followers with him and all that. And I just think it's hilarious to me that all the press and the advocates that are supposed to be protecting our free speech are the ones that are trying to destroy it, which, you know, should have all kinds of bells and whistles.
Let's do a feature, because I think that, even though this is that doesn't have a really good chance of success, I still think the information and the conversation that we can have about this can do good. It could do good sometime in the future. So the deal is that when we're talking about exchanges of information, when you don't like what the person is saying in front of you, teaching like how adults listen to things that they don't like, right? And still stay engaged and not run away.
And still stay friends.
Right. And doing it in a way where not only as the person saying, like, if I said something incendiary, like in the first 30 seconds of talking, you're going to have a more motivation to run away from me and not engage any further. So it's some restraint on the side of the presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's also some restraint on the side of the recipient.
Well, but I think it has more to do with, we're so disconnected from one another and we just lob the grenades, and online there's no connection. Like, I can go on some site with, you know, there's some Facebook page with 10,000 people or 20,000 people, and they'll throw an incendiary post up there wanting to get the clicks, wanting to get, because everything is driven by attention. And so then all these people comment on there, and I can be one in the mix, but I don't know anybody that's commenting. I don't know anybody that's commenting on WKBN or WFMJ that's local, let alone some national page. And so people go on there, and when you're void of relationship, much like you were saying, you know, with the younger generation just waiting to argue with you on Facebook or wherever online, you know, the truth is, when you have relationship, it's harder to, I have plenty of relationships with people that don't think like me, don't worship like me, don't vote like me. And those are good relationships to have. Now, certain values I'm going to protect my kids from, certain things I'm going to allow to influence me, and certain things, hey, you know, we're only going to have this level of relationship, but we have a relationship. I'm not going to chuck you under the bus, because
I'm willing to bet that you're exhibiting more tolerance for the disbelief on the other side than would be reciprocated if they found the beliefs coming from you.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It is an interesting world that we live in, where the side that's known for tolerance is the least tolerant, and the side that is seen as less tolerant tends to have a very big tent and welcome people in. That's not just politically, but you know, even when you talk about traditional values, I know plenty of people with traditional values that are like, look, you want to live your life that way? Like, by all means, you know, you want to, two guys want to get married. Like, I know plenty of people with traditional values that have traditional homes, that love the Lord, that go to church on Sunday, that are like, listen, you're not going to bother me. Go live your life however you want to live your life. But it's interesting to me when we want to start imposing those things. Like, I don't think we should impose a Christian top-down worldview on anybody else. I actually think that's insanely unhealthy. I think Judeo-Christian values have a lot to offer in the cultural spectrum, in the political spectrum, in the educational spectrum. However, I don't think it needs to be crammed down. I think we need to pull out all the tape and let the best ideas win, because the best ideas always win. When you're not putting your finger on the scale always tells the truth. And the problem is, on right or left, when the right puts their finger on the scale for traditional values and wants to push that down, the left has backlash, and vice versa. When they're going to push secularism and all this sort of stuff and they put their finger on the scale, the right backlashes. And we just need to take our fingers off the scale and let the best ideas win. They always do.
Can I ask you a silly question? You won't judge me if...
Yeah.
All right, so this is sort of conspiracy theorist type of question. So I learned earlier today about a Catholic relic that they're having buried in the Vatican, right?
Okay.
And since you're a pastor, I'm sure that pastors just tell everybody the secret truths of all religions.
Well, I'm part Illuminati. I don't know if you know that.
Well, this thing is called a chronovisor. Have you ever heard of a chronovisor?
No.
Well, in the Vatican, the chronovisor was handed down from Pope to Pope, and it is capable of seeing into the future and into the past.
Interesting.
And I have some theories about if it really exists. No one's ever seen it outside the walls of the Vatican. Sure. So have you ever been told about the chronovisor and knew nothing about
it? Never heard of it.
I'm watching your eyes to see if maybe you're just not allowed to say, and it seems that you're telling the truth.
No, if I had heard of that, I would have said, Joe, I mean, it's...
But what, you're not allowed to tell. What would you say if you weren't allowed to tell me? Would you kind of give me a nod to let me know I'm onto something? Yeah, see, I knew it.
No, I'd never heard of that. You know, Catholics certainly have a ton of relics, and I'll use air quotes with that, because a ton of them have been historically disproven, and at times that, you know, they needed certain things to stir up the faithful, and they weren't always... you know, there wasn't always sunshine and rainbows, and things weren't always done, you know, apart from political influence or corruption or money, etc. The evangelical church has plenty of black eyes as well. I'm not just pointing fingers in that regard, but, you know, they certainly put forth some relics and interesting things that have been disproven over time.
All right, so I think I'm going to give you my theory on the chronovisor. So you're going to look it up later, and you're going to see.
I am going to Google it later.
And I think the Catholic Church is protecting us. They're hiding it so that people don't like look into the future and destroy humanity, or look in the past and learn something that will destroy humanity. So the Catholic Church is doing their job and protecting us from the wormhole vision gear.
Wormhole vision gear. Joe's new product. It'll be out next week.
Yes.
You can get it at the Struthers Marketplace.
Listen, if you were to, I have to write a summary for this show, right? And every time we have one of these,
we have a good conversation. This is just Joe and I. This is what we'd talk about if we were sitting having coffee and no microphones were in front of us. We would end up on all these little rabbit trails. And this is just Joe and Doug having a conversation.
Fighting on Facebook, Chronovision,
sentimentality. Goodness. Burying people,
selling,
throwing crap out, China,
ping pong. Wow, this is going to be one for the ages.
Be good. Well, we appreciate you listening, and hopefully we'll be back here on Thursday, God willing.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.